So it's a great pleasure seeing you all here to our 3CL seminar. My name is Felix Steffek. I'm one of the co-directors, and I'm really happy to see so many of you attending. Today, it's a great pleasure welcoming Professor Ernest Lim to give the 3CL seminar. Ernest Lim is the inaugural Chan-sek Keong Chair in Private Law at NUS, which is a very recent promotion. He also serves as Vice Dean of Faculty Development and co-director of the Center for Technology, Robotics, AI, and the Law at NUS. His research expertise in comparative corporate law and governance, as well as other areas of private law, focuses on global challenges such as sustainability and artificial intelligence. Ernest has visited us before, and we are always very happy to welcome him here. He has authored three monographs with Cambridge University Press, of which we are, of course, very happy to hear about in this place. And these are A Case for Shareholders' Fiduciary Duties in Common Law Asia, that is 2019. For this, he was awarded the Society of Legal Scholars Peter Berg's Book Prize for Outstanding Legal Scholarship. He has also published Sustainability and Corporate Mechanisms in Asia 2020 and Social Enterprises in Asia, A New Legal Form 2023. He is the co-editor with Philip Morgan of the Cambridge Handbook of Private Law and Artificial Intelligence, which was published in 2024, and the co-editor with Douglas Schieser of the Oxford Handbook of Climate Change and Private Law, that is forthcoming next year. Today, he'll speak to us on corporate law and climate change, directors' duties, and corporate externalities. Ernest, thank you very much for making the way here. It's always a great pleasure having you here as a speaker, and we're all very much looking forward to your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Felix, for the very gracious introduction, and thank you very much to Eilish for the invitation to give this seminar. Seminar is actually based on a paper that's actually available in the SSRN and as well as the ECGI research paper series. This paper has about 20,000 words, but a shortened version of which will appear as a book chapter in the Oxford Handbook of Climate Change and Private Law that is edited by me and Douglas Kaiser from Yale Law School. This book will be published in April next year, and there are 46 chapters covering all areas of private law, including corporate law and corporate governance. And there are also era-specific chapters, and there are more than 63 authors from both common law, civil law, and mixed jurisdiction involved. Now, motivation and overview. In this paper, I distinguish between the internal and external dimension of directors' duties. So the internal dimension of directors' duties, as many of you will be aware, is concerned with enterprise value, is concerned with corporate interests, which is often associated with firm-specific shareholder value. By contrast, the external dimension is concerned with corporate negative externalities. It is concerned with whether and how directors should address the negative impacts that companies have on the society, on the environment, on the climate, on the other stakeholders, even if it is not tied to firm-specific shareholder value, and even if it may adversely affect shareholder value in at least in the short term. Now, the external dimension of directors' duties has taken on significance for three reasons, which I will elaborate. The first is universal ownership argument and a 2024 Delaware Court of Chancery decision in McRitchie versus Zuckerberg. The second, as many of you will be aware, pertains to the EU-CSDDD and the EU-CSRD. And the final one, which I think is the most interesting development, which I think is the most important development, is concerned with state-owned enterprises. After discussing these three developments, I will discuss three arguments that can be used to support the external dimension of directors' duties. The first is with regard to incorporating nature into corporate constitutions. And interestingly, there are private companies in the UK that have taken this approach. This is private ordering. The second is to cater to shareholders' ESG preferences, and this pertains to the US. And finally, I make the argument that there can be and there should be an alignment of directors' duties to the duties of controlling shareholders and the duties of asset owners in a state-owned enterprise. And I will use China as an example. Now, I will not elaborate on this slide because I think this is actually company law 101 for many of you, okay? And in short, directors are legally required to take into account climate risks and opportunities insofar as these risks and opportunities have a material impact on companies' interests. And I think this is, in my view, this is settled law, okay? And it's nothing controversial about it. But of course, the controversy lies with the enforcement of the law. And I believe that many of you will be aware of the case of Clyde versus Shell, and I will not go into rate that because this has been extensively covered in the UK literature. But if there's time during Q&A, then if you would like me to explain about this seminal decision brought by Clyde against the directors of Shell for breach of directors' duties, I'm happy to elaborate. Suffice to say that I actually agree with Lord Cunworth's trenchant criticism of this case. Now, let's focus on the external dimension. So the key issue is this: can directors and should directors internalize negative corporate externalities where doing so is not linked to or may even conflict with firm-specific shareholder value, especially in the short term. Now, I'm sure many of you here are familiar with double materiality. That concept actually has been implemented in the CSRD, and so it consists of financial materiality, which is actually concerns with effects on enterprise value. And there's also impact materiality, namely firms' effects on the climate, economy, society, human rights, etc., etc. Now, the important point is this: many corporate impacts are not yet fully internalized by share price or corporate law. So a win-win situation is not guaranteed. Namely, there is actually a trade-off between firm profitability and internalizing negative corporate externalities. Now, the evidence is actually quite sobering. The Carbon Majors 2024 database shows that 57 companies are linked to 80% of greenhouse gas emissions since 2016. And many state-owned enterprises and private firms, investor-owned companies, continue to expand fossil fuel operations, notwithstanding and post-Paris Agreement. Now, the implication is this: if boards should focus solely or exclusively or primarily on financial materiality, there is a risk of causing more externalities. And we should think about how corporate law can be used and should be used to require boards to internalize negative corporate externalities. Now, if we have time later, I will discuss this case. This is a really unfortunate case. And the short answer to the question posed by the title is pollution value maximizing. In this paper by Roy Shapira and Louis Zingales, the answer that they gave is actually yes. And in this case, which is a particularly egregious case, Yilihon, which actually manufactures Teflon, which is a non-sticky substance and which, that's being used in frying pans and in different situations, DuPont actually emitted toxic chemicals while producing Teflon, and they've been doing so for decades. And needless to say, that has resulted in there were plant explosions, and their and this toxic chemical actually seeped into the water supply of the residents at West Virginia, right? Now, the interesting thing is that the board of DuPont actually took a rather cynical approach. For them, it would have been shareholder value maximizing, keep on polluting, as long as the probability of detection and conviction is less than 90%. And usually, there are three major mechanisms to regulate corporate misconduct, right? One is regulation, the other is litigation, and the third is the market, which is reputational constraints. In this particular case of DuPont, all three major mechanisms that have been used to regulate corporate misconduct or fail. And in this case, a reputational constraint failed because there's a huge time lag between the pollution and the detection and the prosecution. And by the time that DuPont's egregious behavior was discovered by the authorities and by the residents, the directors have either retired or they have actually passed away. And needless to say, for many of the large polluting companies and many of the large carbon majors, they actually fought very, very aggressively to limit the credibility and diffusion of bad news. And unfortunately, class action lawsuits was dismissed 2 years ago due to the difficulty of proving causation. Now, coming to the crux of my analysis, why should we care about the external dimension of directors' duties? Now, the first concern is universal ownership. And what it means is this: large asset owners care about portfolio-wide performance and not just firm-specific performance. And they would want high-emitting firms to internalize negative externalities because the failure to do so will result in a reduction of the overall portfolio returns. And the implication is that directors should promote the interests of these universal owners, also known as diversified investors, and not just firm-specific investors. And this implies, therefore, that directors should address corporate negative externalities. Now, this is not just a matter of theory, because many of the world's largest asset owners, such as the largest investment banks, such as Singapore's Temasek Holdings, identify themselves as universal owners. Now, the second development is the EUCS DDD and the EUCS RD, which many of you will be familiar with. The interesting thing is that although both pieces of legislation do not impose duties on directors per se, companies must carry out due diligence to address adverse impacts on environment and on human rights. That's what the CSDDD requires. And they must report on double materiality, which is what the CSRD requires. And therefore, as I would elaborate shortly, this changes the environment of expectations, and this will indirectly elevate the standard of care that directors must adhere to with regard to the duty to exercise reasonable tactical and diligence. Now, the final development, which I think is the most important and interesting, concerns state owned enterprises. Now, state owned enterprises are simultaneously major emitters and key decarbonizers. And the other interesting feature of SOEs is that SOE purposes are explicitly multidimensional. They are set up to produce profit, but they are also set up to actually produce affordable goods and services and to promote social and environmental good. And these considerations go well beyond the promotion of firm-specific shareholder value. Now, the question is this: whether Anglo-American law allows directors to address these external considerations if it is not tied to firm-specific shareholder value? Very unfortunate answer I'm going to give you is, at least in the context of this 2024 case of McRitchie versus Zuckerberg, the answer is no. So in this particular paper, it was my first time writing on Delaware law, and I was actually a bit nervous. I was concerned that I got Delaware law correct because it's my first time researching and writing on Delaware law. And what I did was I actually wrote to Judge Vice Chancellor Travis Lester, wrote a magnificent judgment on Ritchie versus Zuckerberg. I wrote to him on LinkedIn. I said, "Do you have time to take a look, you know, at this piece of what I've written?" And surprisingly, you know, he replied quite soon after that. I said, "Yes, I have the time, and please send it to me." And the next day, he replied back and came with comments. And fortunately, my analysis was correct. But he gave me very valuable suggestions. And I do not know Vice Chancellor Travis Lester before that. I just wrote to him, you know, hoping that out of goodwill, he may respond to me, given how busy he is. And I'm just a total stranger. So sometimes you never know, right? People are kind-hearted and people are interested. And, you know, he replied back very quickly. Now, in this case, the plaintiff alleged that Meta's directors and officers, including Mark Zuckerberg, breached their fiduciary duties by seeking to generate only firm-specific shareholder value and by neglecting to protect the interests of diversified investors, namely universal owners that I've just described. So what did the court hold? VC Lester held that directors owe duties to the company and its firm-specific shareholders. Directors of a company have absolutely no duty to diversify or universal investors as such, and therefore there is no requirement to reduce or to address corporate negative externalities in order to improve portfolio performance of these diversified investors. That said, the court laid down two important qualifications. The court said that directors must consider broader economic harms, that is, directors must internalize negative externalities when corporate decisions consistently or profoundly harm the broader economy, and in doing so, harm the financial interests of the firm's specific shareholders. And secondly, he said that directors can address corporate negative externalities if shareholders agree. Now, let's take a look at these two qualifications. In my view, there is something actually quite problematic about the court's reasoning. First, directors' actions must consistently or profoundly harm the economy or the environment or the climate or any group of stakeholders. And second, the harm to the economy or the climate must harm the financial interests of firm-specific shareholders before directors can address corporate negative externalities. Now, if you apply this test to most carbon majors, directors are unlikely to be in breach of their duties. This is because it is extremely difficult for a minority shareholder of Shell, BP, Chevron, Gazprom, you know, or any carbon major to show that directors have caused the company to consistently or profoundly harm the environment and nature. And even if the minority shareholder can show that, the minority shareholder must show that there's a causal link between that action by the directors and the harm that the company has inflicted and the financial losses. But the paradox is that, as many of us know, many of the carbon majors, such as Gazprom, Petrobras, you know, and even Chevron and Shell, have been profitable. It is one thing to show that carbon majors collectively, as a whole, have caused profound harm to the climate or have caused consistent harm to the climate, which will translate to macro harm such as persistent GDP losses or systemic market impact. It is another thing to show that the directors of this specific carbon major has caused profound or consistent harm to the climate, which in turn has led to a drop in the share price in that specific firm. This is because the financial performance of a firm depends on a multitude of factors. Now, VC Lester also addressed the second qualification. When can directors address corporate negative externalities? Now, and this should be quite familiar to you because VC Lester in this particular seminal judgment in Delaware also discussed English law. And he actually mentioned that both Delaware law and English law is actually quite similar. Directors can address corporate negative externalities if they are rationally related to firm-specific shareholders' interests. Hardly any different from Section 172, in which directors must promote the success of the company for the benefit of the members, and in doing so, have regard for all these external considerations. Now, the second one is interesting. He said that directors can address negative externalities if shareholders amend the corporate constitution. So the corporate constitution can require that a corporate purpose includes protecting the climate and nature, and because directors must comply with the corporate constitution, they have to take actions to mitigate climate change. The corporate constitution can require the directors exercise their powers to address negative externalities. And the corporate constitution can also be amended to require that directors discharge their duties for the benefit of nature or climate. Now, but all of these, as you can appreciate, is highly problematic, right? Because it depends on the wishes and incentives of the shareholders. Ultimately, Delaware law, just like English law, is based on enlightened shareholder principles model. Now, you should be familiar with the CSDDD and the CSRRD, okay? And I will not discuss this in great depth. But what is interesting is this. The CSDDD, notwithstanding the omnibus proposals, has extraterritorial effects. It applies to foreign companies, including US companies that meet the threshold. So the implication is what does the CSDDD have for the directors of US companies? Now, it has been argued that directors of US companies must address corporate negative externalities as required by the CSDDD because failure to do so could breach CAMA oversight duties. If the CSDDD-related risks are central to the company, and directors fail to establish oversight systems or disregard red flags. So Luca Enriquez and Roy Shapiro actually have a paper on that. So what about in the UK? The standard of the duty of care of directors is shaped by regulatory developments and market expectations. And therefore, in determining if directors of UK companies have discharged their duty to exercise due care, courts must also take into account or will take into account what the CSDDD or what the CSRD require in-scope companies to do. So in other words, it will be very difficult for directors of UK companies to argue that they have discharged their duties if they are negligent in complying with the CSDDD or the CSRD. And this analysis is actually very aligned with Eilish's recent LQR paper on reconciling shareholder primacy and the interests of people and planet. And she has also kindly pointed out to me that under UK law, there's such things as a doublet claim, right? Whereby directors should have breached certain regulations. They could be potentially liable for breaching their duties especially with regard to the duty of care. Now, here comes the more interesting, in my view, you know, and what could be considered quite unusual for most of you. Now, let me turn to state-owned enterprises. Many of us here are familiar with investor-owned IAs. But state-owned enterprises are extremely important and extremely interesting. They are among the worst emitters, and they own and manage fossil fuels. At the same time, they also account for 50% of planned renewables investments in many markets. And actually outperform on decarbonization metrics in emerging economies. And the second, and well, before moving to second feature, if you look at the Carbon Majors 20 Rainbow database, 13 out of 20 of the top carbon majors are SOEs or under the control of the state. And interestingly, 4 out of 13 of the top carbon majors are from China. But the really interesting thing is that they also lead in renewable investments, right? Over 50% of planned investments come from SOEs. And the second interesting and major feature of SOEs is that they are set up, as I mentioned earlier, not only to generate profit, but to provide affordable goods and services, to promote economic, social development, and to protect the environment, because states have used SOEs to implement climate and energy policy. For example, SOE ownership policies in Sweden and China and many other SOEs embed climate objectives. So directors are expressly expected to act on climate impacts even when not related to firm-specific shareholder value. And therefore, the external dimension of directors' duties is not an exception. It is actually an essential part of SOE. Now, let me examine three arguments for the external dimension. Okay, let's move on to the first one. Now, this is perhaps some of you may be aware. Okay, Guardian reported on this 3 years ago, actually. So some of you may have used this product. It's called Faith in Nature, which is actually a British private company. And 3 years ago, there was a big splash, not just in Guardian, but many newspapers in the UK, in which Faith in Nature announced that they have appointed Nature to its board. Okay. And there are other companies, such as a furniture company, as far as I'm known, called the Hackney Group, and they've amended their corporate constitution to include pro-nature clauses. So corporate object clauses now include references to nature, includes references to the protection of future generations. And directors' duty clauses now refer to nature as well. And there has to be a nature guardian within the board of directors. There are also clauses stating that the nature guardian, namely the particular director, must be satisfied with the annual reporting. Now, why do these clauses matter? They operationalize the external dimension of director's duties. Effectively, impact materiality is being written into corporate constitutions and board obligations as a result of private ordering. Okay, so it's not top-down, unlike the EUCSRD or EUCSRD. These are voluntary obligations that companies have written into their corporate constitutions. But there are several problems, right? One problem is the absence of prioritization rule in conflict cases. So what if there's a conflict between protecting nature's interests and firm profitability? What should directors do? What are they legally permitted to do? There's nothing stated in the corporate constitution. And there's also the unique qua member rule under English law. So members cannot easily enforce pro-nature clauses because the UK qua member rule means that shareholders can only enforce these rights that are granted to them in their capacity as shareholders. But the nature clauses seeks to protect nature. And the nature guardian, who is effectively a director, okay, representing nature's interests, cannot bring derivative action because derivative action can only be brought by members. And the nature guardian can be removed by a simple majority of shareholders. And the pro-nature clauses can be removed or amended by special resolution. Okay. Now, I will skim through that rather quickly, and this is what we see in the US. You may say that, okay, right, there's another mechanism for external dimension. In other words, directors can and should cater to shareholders' preferences, okay? And this is the theory advanced by Hart and Zingales, right? And the shareholder preferences could be ESG preferences. Now, but there's also a lot of evidence showing that many institutional investors are financially motivated, notwithstanding the fact that they have pro-ESG preferences, which is consistent with the studies on climate's financial materiality. And there is actually a really important study showing that the behavior of the signatories to the UN Principles for Responsible Investment are highly hypocritical. The largest asset managers such as BlackRock, State Street, and Fidelity often vote against ESG proposals, notwithstanding the fact that they proclaim that they are pro-ESG. And the survey shows a minimal willingness to sacrifice even small amounts of shareholder returns. And finally, you know, as we all know, there is now a severe anti-ESG backlash in the US, right? And asset managers in the US have been sued for breaching their fiduciary duty to the ultimate beneficiaries because they took into account ESG considerations. So the bottom line is this: catering to shareholders' preferences is not a good basis for the external dimension of directors' duties because of the risk of sacrificing firm-specific shareholder returns, which are likely to be opposed by these asset managers. Now, I've come to the last part of this presentation. So, in my view, there can be an alignment of the duties of directors of SOEs, duties of the controlling shareholders of SOEs, and the duties of the asset owners of SOEs. Now, recall that directors' best interests of the company in SOEs is inherently multidimensional. Directors are permitted and may even be required to consider these external considerations, such as those pertaining to climate and economy, that may impact on near-term firm-specific shareholder returns if doing so is aligned with statutory purpose and ownership policy. Now, in Steel Enterprises, the state is the controlling shareholder of SOEs, and the state as the controller has public interest mandates. It can appoint and remove directors, and it sets expectations. And in many jurisdictions, the state as the controller often exercise oversight of the SOEs and therefore strengthen alignment if he has the expectations of the controller and the duties of directors. Now, in an SOE, the state is also an asset owner. And as an asset owner, it manages diversified portfolios for the benefit of the beneficiaries. And it therefore, it seeks to optimize long-term risk-adjusted returns, right? And so it may rationally decide to internalize negative externalities in one or more of its SOE within its portfolio in order to protect the overall portfolio returns. But the calculus can also go in the opposite direction, as I will discuss shortly. And there's also a time horizon match because the state as a controlling shareholder of SOE and the state as the asset owner of SOE can adopt a long-term approach. And therefore, it means that they can focus on intergenerational equity, systemic climate risks. Okay. Now, I want to discuss, so that is a theory part. I want to give you a case study a study that I'm going to tell you pertains to Chinese coal-fired power plants, which are state-owned enterprises. And you may be wondering, why bother about China? You know, two reasons. The first is China has accounted for the largest share of fossil fuel emissions for almost 20 years, as reported in The Guardian. And 2 months ago, The Guardian report, there's only one player, why China is becoming a world leader in green energy. And yesterday, The Economist reported, China's clean energy revolution will reshape markets and politics. So China is interesting because, number one, it is the leader currently in the world with regards to decarbonization, with regards to investments and the production of renewables such as wind and solar and electric cars. Number two, China, paradoxically, is also one of the world's top three largest builders and investor with regard to coal-fired power plants. What is happening? Because you could see these two seemingly contradictory scenarios, and therefore, which makes China worth studying, and usually economists is quite critical of China, but I think it's quite surprising that economists will actually declare China to be a leader. So is Guardian, which has traditionally been extremely critical of China. Now, let's take a look at this slide. what makes China interesting is that is this. SOEs are pervasive in China. The Chinese government here is both the controlling shareholder and asset owner of the coal-fired power plant SOE and related SOEs such as the state-owned bank, such as the grid purchaser, and such as the coal supplier with whom the SOE plant does business, okay? And the government built these coal-fired power plants not just for financial gain, but to provide affordable, accessible energy for its citizens and for its businesses. And the government is also an asset owner, not just a controlling shareholder. And therefore, it is overly simplistic for directors and controlling shareholder of a coal-fired power plant SOE to pursue only SOE-specific shareholder returns. The SOE is part of a system of other SOEs controlled by the same government, which is a diversified state asset owner. And therefore, the directors and controlling shareholders of a specific coal-fired power plant SOE cannot be solely concerned with maximizing the SOE's specific returns. They should consider, they have to consider the externalities produced as well as other external considerations. In other words, directors of SOE must consider external considerations, and I'll argue later, directors of SOEs of other companies, and I'll give the example of US, must consider external dimension. So the external dimension of directors' duties is an intrinsic feature in Chinese SOEs and also in government-owned utilities in the US. I'm not so sure about the UK, but perhaps a similar argument could be extended to government-owned utility companies in the UK. Now, but having said that, in the case of Chinese coal-fired power plant, the directors of SOEs took into account broader economic considerations and prioritized them above decarbonization and above shareholder firm-specific returns. So the interesting thing is this, despite, I think I should end in about a minute's time, despite making net zero pledges, China accounted for 95% of new global coal construction in 2023, 95% of the global coal construction. So the puzzle is this, right? So why does China continue to build new coal-fired power plants if the risks of stranded assets are material? The reason is this, Chinese SOE's decisions are guided by broader economic analysis, not narrow firm-level profitability. Directors of Chinese SOEs take into account external considerations, such as the impacts of the broader economy, and not just firm-specific shareholder returns. And they base the analysis on the fact that coal projects can break even economically within 7 years under certain current assumptions, whereas firm cash flows might not turn positive for 21 years. Therefore, from a country-level economic lens, coal appears beneficial in the short term and can be used to finance the renewable investments. But from a firm lens, it looks unattractive. But in my paper, I make the argument that from a shadow carbon pricing perspective, the Chinese SOE's director's calculation is mistaken because they failed to take into account the cost of externalities. Final slide. I think I think that my analysis is implications for government-owned utilities, and I also take the argument. I will also make the argument that universal ownership cuts both ways. It can favor emission reduction, but in the case of Chinese coal-fired plant SOEs, it can actually lead to continued, emissions. Okay. Thank you so much.